This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The flame is out in Rio. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Monday, August 22nd, glad you're with us. Here's what's up this hour.
The Summer Olympics are over, with the torch now passed to Tokyo, but the controversy involving swimmer Ryan Lochte still burns. Hear what he's saying now about what happened to him and his teammates.
On the campaign trail, mixed signals about whether Donald Trump may be tweaking his positions on immigration.
Police in Connecticut are trying to figure out why gunmen shot up a crowded house party in Bridgeport, wounding 13 people. Miraculously, no one was killed.
And sit down for this one. The new trend among millennials: working during the summer.
For several years, the number of young people, those 16 to 24 right now, the good chunk of the millennial, they've been working less and less, even during the summer, even during July. But this year, we finally saw that change a little bit, that the number of young Americans seeking jobs and actually landing them increased this summer.
Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Marath on millennials searching for and finding jobs this summer. His report in about 20 minutes. Is the campaign of Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump trying to soften his stance on immigration? There are mixed signals coming off the weekend. The New York businessman has made a tough stand on immigration, a signature issue of his campaign, as you know, pledging, among other things, to create a deportation force to rapidly remove some of the country's estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants. Yesterday, his new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, appeared on CNN and suggested the deportation force might not be set up after all. She said it is to be determined. Also, Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions appeared on Mr. Trump's behalf on CBS's Face the Nation.
He will have to think about what's the right thing to do. He listened to a lot of people. I don't think he made any commitments. He's thinking that through. I think that's the right thing. But he is absolutely committed to the first thing that has to be done, and that's end the lawlessness.
Mr. Trump tried this past week to reach out to minority groups, in part by holding a meeting on Saturday with his Hispanic Advisory Council at Trump Tower in New York. Police are seeking at least two suspects in a shooting at a crowded house party in Bridgeport, Connecticut, that left 13 people wounded. Police believe the shooters were hiding behind hedges alongside the house and opened fire on more than 100 people at around 1:30 yesterday morning. Most of the victims, who range in age from 18 to 24, suffered gunshot wounds to their legs. By yesterday afternoon, all but five of the victims had been released from hospitals. One woman was listed in critical condition with injuries to her face and jaw. She will survive, but will reportedly need reconstructive surgery. Av Harris is the Bridgeport police spokesman.
There appear to have been two shooters firing into the backyard of the house and into the house itself from behind some hedges.
Police said the renters who threw the party had gone to authorities to apply for a permit to charge money at the party, but were denied. Police said they believe they charged for alcohol anyway and could face criminal charges. No motive has been established. American swimmer Ryan Lochte says his mistake was over-exaggerating the story about being held up at gunpoint in Rio, but he stopped short of admitting lying. When he was asked whether he thought he was lying, he said, "I wasn't lying to a certain extent. I over-exaggerated what happened." He was on Brazilian TV.
I over-exaggerated. Part of it, the very first part, I was intoxicated. I was a little frightened. I mean, having a gun pointed to you.
He also appeared with NBC's Matt Lauer. Lochte claimed during the games that he and three other swimmers were held up at gunpoint after leaving a party. And one of the claims he made was that a gun was cocked and pointed at his forehead. Police say the Olympians vandalized a gas station bathroom and were confronted by armed security guards demanding payment for damages. USA Today, reconstructing events, says a narrative of the night's events support Lochte's later account, in which he said he thought the swimmers were being robbed when they were approached at a gas station by armed men who flashed badges, pointed guns at them, and demanded money. Well, Olympic athletes making their way home today after the Summer Games in Rio drew to a close last night may arrive to a hero's welcome. But what happens once that wears off? John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic, says despite their varying degrees of success, many will have the feeling that life suddenly seems ordinary and experience an emotional crash. John, what have you found?
First of all, there's no official diagnosis post-Olympic syndrome. But I think that the athletes themselves all know what that is, and they all talk about it, in that they reach a high moment, and then after that high moment, of course, you know, the hoopla dies down, and they're not sure what they're going to do. And what the sports psychologists say is that they've spent some at an early point of their lives identifying with the sport, identifying with the outcome of the sport. Mm. That when it's over, the identity of who they are aside from the sport has really changed, or in some cases hasn't been developed yet.
Yeah. Well, explain what you found with Allison Schmidt, who we know from rolling up some medals in London 2012 in swimming.
Well, what's interesting with Allison is that she went through all of the things that you and I just discussed, but she was one of the people who was smart enough to actually seek help and to seek counseling to get her way through it. You know, one of the problems here is that when you're talking about an elite athlete, they're really trained to push through it. You know, whatever adversity they're faced with, you grind through it. And in her case, she realized, you know, this is something that I can't really grind through, that this is a bigger issue than I'm capable of getting through, and she sought help. A lot of athletes, you know, the word depression is kind of a dirty word in the locker room, in those circles, for that very reason, because they've been trained for so long that, you know, you battle your way through it. You're out there alone. Your coach isn't with you. You don't have help. You've got to do it on your own. But, of course, depression is something that's not, you know, easily battled.
Yeah. We're speaking with John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic. He's got a story there entitled The Dark Side of Going for Gold. You talked about, too, this judo athlete, Taraji Murray Williams, who said, like, when he got home from the Olympics in Beijing, things were, quote, sickeningly mundane. So how do you prep for the return home or cope with some of these feelings if, you know, you're experiencing this post-Olympic letdown?
Yeah, well, you know, what the therapists say to do and what he himself said to do is that when you're preparing for the Olympics before they start, already think about what's going to go on afterwards. Already have a plan in place. Therapists will say, you know, even if it's traveling, no matter what it is, have something in place that you're going to do after the games. And that's what his advice was. He said, you know, he came back, win or lose. He won one year. He didn't do as well the other year. But regardless of what the outcome was, he had the same kind of letdown afterwards. And I think that the idea is that, you know, he had nothing waiting for him when he got back. So the advice that the therapist will give and that he himself gives is even before the game starts, start knowing start having in place some kind of plan.
Thanks, John. John Florio, contributing writer to The Atlantic. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit Barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
Whether traveling or working remotely, we know your PC is your business headquarters. And when work takes you on the go, you need a laptop that can keep up. Dell's XPS 13 empowers small business owners to collaborate anywhere with incredible battery life and powerful performance. Reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times faster performance when you refresh to new Dell PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Explore the XPS 13 at Dell.com/radio. Glad you're with us. Good Monday to you. Another warning about the Zika virus. A top U.S. public health official is now saying the mosquito-borne Zika virus could extend its reach beyond the U.S. Gulf Coast. now that there's confirmation of 5 cases in the tourist destination of Miami Beach. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the Allergy and Infectious Diseases Unit of the National Institutes of Health, was on ABC News yesterday.
I do not think, although we need to be prepared for it, that we're going to see a diffuse, broad outbreak in the United States because of a number of issues, particularly the conditions in our country as a broad continental USA, would not really make that a very likely happening.
As you've heard, Miami's Wynwood neighborhood last month became the site of the first locally transmitted cases of Zika in the continental U.S. Today, school begins in Wynwood. The threat of Zika for children is said to be remote. And while it's not ideal in this weather, pants and long sleeve shirts will help, plus bug spray. Zika is primarily a concern for pregnant women. It is 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, for the Olympics, it's so long, Rio. Hello, Asia. The next 3 Olympics are headed for relatively calmer ports of call in South Korea, Japan, and China following the organizational drama surrounding the 2014 Winter Olympics in Russia and the just-completed Summer Games in Brazil, although challenges remain, especially when it comes to finances. In Rio action yesterday, the U.S. men's basketball team trounced Serbia 96-66 to win the gold medal. Overall, the U.S. captured 121 medals, while China came in a distant second with 70. The suicide attacker who detonated his explosives amid an outdoor Kurdish wedding party in southeastern Turkey, killing at least 51 people, was an Islamic State group child as young as 12. The extremist group has a history of using children as weapons, sending them to their death strapped with explosives and putting them on front lines in Iraq and Syria. The Illinois Department of Corrections says 6 officers have been injured by inmates at a maximum security prison. The officers were treated for injuries that are not life-threatening after the incident yesterday at the Pontiac Correctional Center. Health officials say the mosquito-borne Zika virus could extend its reach across the Gulf Coast now that it's been traced to the popular tourist destination of Miami Beach. Anthony Fauci of the National Institutes of Health spoke with ABC News.
I would not be surprised if we see cases in Texas and Louisiana, particularly now where you have the situation with flooding in Louisiana. There's going to be a lot of problems getting rid of standing water.
Concern has been mounting since confirmation that Zika has expanded into a second region of Miami-Dade County. Heading into the final 2 months of the presidential election, Hillary Clinton has amassed far more money than Donald Trump. Clinton's campaign raised $63 million in July, giving her $140 million in the bank. Trump raised $36 million in July and now has $78 million. And there's a new world record in fist bumping. The new mark was set by 300 people in Alaska over the weekend, which was verified by a Guinness World Records rep. If a single bump had gone awry, the record would have been invalid. The event served to raise awareness about homelessness.
Boy, that would leave blisters and bruises and...
Well,
right?
Let's hope they didn't do it very hard.
Oh, still, it's repeatedly. Yikes. That's a day off from work today for sure. Can't lift anything. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Dell. Check out Dell's new XPS 13 laptop featuring incredible battery life and performance that's 4 times faster. Learn more at Dell.com/radio. Here's a little something that might make you feel a little better about today's young adults. The so-called millennial generation sought jobs in greater numbers this summer and found them. The unemployment rate for 16 to 24-year-olds last month fell to its lowest level in 9 years. It's a story from Wall Street Journal economic reporter Eric Marath. Eric, what do we have?
For several years, the number of young people, those 16 to 24, right now, that's a good chunk of the millennials, they've been working less and less, even during the summer, even during July, which is the peak of summer jobs. But this year, we finally saw that change a little bit, that the number of young Americans seeking jobs and actually landing them increased this summer. So we thought that was a notable change to what had been a long-running trend.
Wow. All right, so what happened? Chasing Pokemon Go characters and video games, it became to be understood that they don't pay?
Right. Well, that had kind of been one of the long-running jokes, and actually not a totally invalid theory, right? So in 1989, 77.5% almost 80% of young adults 16 to 24 work. And that number, you know, fell pretty steadily from that point down to about 60% in recent years. And a lot of that was attributed to, in part, video games and things like that. Also, in part, to an emphasis on travel and volunteering and doing all sorts of other things with your summer besides what I did during my summer as a teenager and actually getting a job.
Yeah.
But part of that, at least in more recently, probably reflected the labor market.
Okay.
Well, if there's 10% unemployment like we saw during the recession, then you can get a 30-year-old person with 10 years of work experience to take the job at McDonald's or work as a lifeguard, and you know that they already have a track record of showing up on time and not having any issues with maybe, say, alcohol or drugs, why wouldn't you hire that person over the teenager that hasn't proven their responsibility and, maybe is going to go back to school and at the end of August, and then you lose the worker, right?
Right.
Well, now where are we at? We have 5% unemployment. Some of these low-skilled jobs, restaurant jobs, lifeguard, types of things people do in the summer, well, those places are desperate to find workers, and guess what? It looks like they're turning back to teenagers and those in their early 20s.
Well, we're speaking with Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Marath about his piece entitled New Millennial Trend, Working During the Summer. Drill down a little bit more on those teen numbers, ages 16 to 19, because they had, what, the highest participation rate or increase?
Right. So if you broke down the group, so the broader group that the Labor Department looks at is 16 to 24. So that's basically high school and college students. If you just narrow that down to the group that's probably in high school or just graduated from high school, 16 to 19, that's the group where you saw labor force participation increase. It's the highest level it's been in a few years. So that, again, probably suggests that people they're looking for low-skilled jobs are actually finding those jobs, those people that are 16 to 19 are finding those jobs. For the older group, the college age group, labor force participation stayed about where it's been recently, in the 73% range. So there wasn't much change there. The increased workforce for young people was among teenagers.
Thanks, Eric. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Eric Marath. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, Wix.com has something for you. Used by more than 84 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. You need to get the word out about your business. It all starts with a stunning website. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from and the drag-and-drop editor, there is no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Wix.com empowers business owners to create their own professional websites every day. When you're running your own business, you're bound to be busy. Too busy. Too busy worrying about your budget. Too busy scheduling appointments. Too busy to build a website for your business. And because you're too busy, it has to be easy. And that's where Wix.com comes in. With Wix.com, it's easy and free. Go to Wix.com to create your own website today. The result is stunning.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, August 22nd. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. 13 people wounded by gunfire at a Connecticut house party. The Blue Cut fire in California has been contained. The new ones to watch are around Spokane, Washington. The Rio Olympics draw to a close. Swimmer Ryan Lochte says he wasn't lying, he was over-exaggerating. UFC boss Dana White tells TMZ there will be no third fight between McGregor and Diaz. SummerSlam saw Brock Lesnar's elbow open a gash on Randy Orton, needed 10 staples to close it, Lesnar by TKO. And a feel-good story about a community rallying to help a girl and her family in Montana. That story in about 20 minutes. The Washington Examiner reports that election watchers say there's a significant chance the Senate will be evenly divided between Republicans and Democrats in 2017. Senior congressional correspondent Susan Ferriccio says that's a result that would seem to ensure
another few years of gridlock in the upper chamber, regardless of who wins the White House. Susan, what's the scene on the campaign trail?
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many vulnerable Republican seats, and there's only really one vulnerable Democratic seat. Republicans are in the majority, so if they lose, you know, if they lose four seats, then it's going to be a tied Senate. That's a possibility. If you look at the polls, there's some very close polls. So there's no guarantee that they will stay in the majority or lose the majority. And so it's, you know, it's possible that they will end up either tied or with Democrats could potentially pick up a couple more seats and have a very slim majority. And so it's always interesting to write about a 50-50 Senate because there hasn't been one in so long. It just to sort of remind readers what that could look like. And of course, the tiebreaker would be the vice president, and we don't know who that's going to be in and or what party, which makes it interesting. And then also sort of a requirement that the Senate power share a little bit because, you know, when it comes to important committee assignments, et cetera. So it could make it, you know, a kind of an interesting dynamic, and it could complicate a lot of things for both parties, particularly if, say, you had a Democratic majority, Democratic White House. You would have to have more power sharing in a 50-50 Senate with the Republicans, even though the tie break would go to the Democratic Party. So it changes the dynamic, and it did certainly in 2001 when it happened. And it forced the sides to work together more. I don't know if that could happen now because there's so much animosity, really, between Democrats and Republicans in the Senate. I'm questioning how that's going to happen. But it would certainly require that. I'm not sure if they'd be able to pull it off, though. And so I thought it would be interesting to write about that. Of course, we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but they're close races, particularly, you know, battleground states. And also, you look at New Hampshire, where you have a three-point race there, and some other states were just really tight. And you could go either way at this point. It's only August, so, you know, people start paying much closer attention to these things in the fall. But at this point, you know, we've got some nail biters, and it's just not clear which way it's going to fall and or, you know, what party's going to end up leading the Senate.
Jeez. All right, so if it winds up being 50-50, what would that mean for, say, hotly contested issues, if anything? Does it change the issues that are debated on Capitol Hill?
Well, it could because there's not – first of all, you let in the Senate, 60 votes is required for a lot of things. And any major legislation usually requires 60 votes. And what that means is that the, you know, if you've got a 50-50 Senate, you're much further away from the 60, and you have to pick up more of the minority.
Yeah.
If you have that tie-breaking vote to make you the 51st, you know, for the Democrats or for Republicans, you're 10 votes away from 60. And whenever that happens, you need to dig deeper into the Democratic or Republican Party, depending on who's the majority and the minority. And that changes legislation. It shifts it toward the minority because they have more leverage. And that changes the outcome, or it completely clogs everything up and prevents anything major from passing. But, you know, I was talking to Trent Lott about this, and he's the former majority and minority leader in the Senate who worked in the 50-50 split. And he said at that time, you know, more than a decade ago, they were able to get some things done, some tax cut deals and things like that, some major things. And it forced them to work together a little more closely. And he said overall, you know, they had a lot of arguments, but they got a lot done. And I think the question is, it's so different now. It's changed over the past decade. And my observation has just gotten more bitter and partisan. I don't know how that would work in the new Senate. You can have a new minority leader or majority leader, depending if Democrats win in November, because Harry Reid's retiring, and you'll have likely Senator Charles Schumer. What kind of negotiator is he? We don't know. You know, we know a little bit, but what will he be as a leader? That's a huge question. Would Mitch McConnell remain in charge? Would there be a shakeup if Republicans lose the majority, and then you have a negotiator there that would be trying to figure out about? So it's lots of big changes, we could see some strange dynamics, basically, in January.
Thanks, Susan. Susan Ferriccio, senior congressional correspondent at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Always good driving advice, I felt, in this song from Jim Morrison.
Yes.
Keep your eyes on the road, your hands upon the wheel, I believe is how he delivers that.
Something we need to be told on a Monday morning, for sure.
Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, the final day of the Olympics in Rio was not without some controversy that had social media buzzing. Two Mongolian wrestling coaches stripped off their clothing at one point to protest the result of a bronze medal match. The scene began after a wrestler from Uzbekistan appeared to have lost to the Mongolian wrestler 7-6. Uzbekistan challenged the scoring, believing that the Mongolian was fleeing instead of fighting because he was running around in celebration with less than 10 seconds left. Uzbekistan won the challenge, much to the chagrin of the wrestler from Mongolia and his coaches. One coach took his shoes and shirt off and threw them to the mat in disgust in front of the officials, and the other stripped all the way down to his briefs.
Oh, so he was even more upset because
he went right
to his underwear.
Yeah, he didn't mess around. The dramatic display managed to win over the Brazilian crowd, who started cheering then for Mongolia.
That could be the only cheers that Brazil did for a team other than their own.
Right, exactly.
Because they booed everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it was the last day of the Olympics. They were looking for something to cheer about, and I guess they found it. I guess this wasn't sort of an isolated incident as far as the officials were concerned.
Yeah.
I guess they actually kicked out some officials from an earlier match that they thought weren't doing a good job. So this was a theme throughout the day, apparently.
And who knew that Mongolia even qualified for the Olympics or cared?
Yeah.
That was news to me.
I mean, look, they, you know, again, when you're not winning 100 medals like the United States, every
right.
single medal counts, right?
You got
a bronze medal is going to be a big deal to them.
Speaking of wrestling, do we have to assume some responsibility here for Adeline Gray, the female wrestler who was supposed to win gold?
Yeah.
Or I don't know, supposed to win, but had been
favored,
predicted,
yes.
favored to win gold, and then got upset in the quarterfinals after appearing on our show.
So you're saying that we are a jinx. We're the new SI jinx for Olympic athletes.
I feel bad about that. But apparently she then went on the beach with some friends and won a pickup soccer game, which she was elated about. So,
there you go.
Made everything okay.
Small victories. And Gordon, if you've heard just about enough of Ryan Lochte and the story that keeps us giving us more to shake our heads about every day, you're not alone. The same apparently holds true for countless athletes, trainers, journalists, and others associated with the Olympics in Rio. Yahoo Sports says that a marker board was set up at Rio's main airport over the weekend for travelers to pass the time while waiting for their flights. Many have written brief parting messages to the city of Rio before catching their flight. Some of the messages thank Rio for being a great host city. Others are a shout out to the athletes' home countries. However, Yahoo says that one, if not the most common messages on the board is something to the effect of, sorry about Lochte.
Oh.
Or sorry about Ryan Lochte, or some variation therein.
He has made a mess of this whole thing. He really has.
I mean, you imagine you're the athletes down there. This is, you know, for some of them, their one and only time, one
right.
and only shot at the Olympics. And
yeah.
all they keep getting asked about is, what do you think about Lochte?
About
I saw
Lochte?
Simone Biles actually on TV doing an interview with NBC and getting asked, what do you think about Ryan Lochte?
And what'd she say?
She was very
diplomatic.
Very diplomatic, okay. as you might expect. You know, she's very poised.
I still say that Bubba Watson had the best response. What about wee hours and taxi?
Yeah.
Sound like a good idea to you at the Rio Olympics.
6 a.m., yeah. you know, so drunk that you right. apparently don't remember anything.
Wise words from a golfer. 13 minutes in front of the hour.
Remember when you were a kid and you couldn't wait to be old enough to shave? Not anymore. For most of us, shaving is just another one of those joyless tasks on our daily to-do list. Overpriced blades, nicks, irritation, and of course, you always run out of something, which means shaving with a dull razor. That's gonna hurt. Sounds like it's time you tried Harry's, a company that believes shaving should be, well, less of a hassle, which is why Harry's makes getting quality shaving products convenient, and for a lot less money, a lot less. Because only Harry's ships directly from their own factory, which means no upcharging. And with Harry's, you can order online and get blades when you need them. Harry's is so sure you'll love their shave, they'll send you their popular free trial set, complete with a razor, a 5-blade cartridge, shaving gel, and post-shave balm for free. Just pay shipping. To claim your free trial set and post-shave balm, just go to harrys.com and enter code RADIO52 at checkout. That's promo code RADIO52. That's Radio 5-2.
Thanks for spending time with us. Winning a gold medal at the Olympics can be a life-changing experience, right? And depending on where you're from, you might expect a financial windfall. When swimmer Joseph Schooling edged out Michael Phelps in the 100-meter butterfly event, he became the first athlete from Singapore to win a gold medal. And he will be the first
to earn the country's gold medal bonus, which totals $753,000. That's nearly 30 times more money than Phelps or any other U.S. athlete would get for gold. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
More than 2 disaster recovery centers are now open in areas that flooded in Louisiana, and more are expected to open as buildings are found with enough parking. It's been a struggle for thousands of people across the southern part of the state over the past week. Brett Meredith is commander of the Baton Rouge Salvation Army.
I was handing out food boxes, and a lady just broke down crying, and I hugged her and prayed with her and just consoled her. Because it's just a lot of overwhelming emotions right now for folks.
Officials are also setting up a temporary bus system to help people in and around Baton Rouge whose vehicles were damaged by flooding. An arson fire that destroyed 189 homes in a Northern California town is now 95% contained. The 6-square-mile blaze destroyed at least 300 structures in Lower Lake. More than 1,200 firefighters have been battling the fire that started August 13th. Drugs collected from Prince's Paisley Park estate after his body was discovered in April were counterfeit pills that contain the powerful painkiller fentanyl. Nearly 2 dozen pills found in one Aleve bottle were falsely labeled. Autopsy results attributed the 57-year-old musician's death to an accidental fentanyl overdose. He did not have a prescription for a fentanyl, an opioid many times more powerful than morphine. That's leading investigators into thinking Prince took the pills without knowing exactly what they were. Donald Trump's new campaign manager says they're still discussing whether to agree to the 3 presidential debates scheduled by an independent commission. Kellyanne Conway tells ABC's This Week that Trump is very engaged with debate prep, but they're still discussing the schedule. Trump had complained that 2 of the 3 debates were up against NFL games. And it looks like this college football season will pick up where last year's left off. Alabama's number 1, Clemson number 2. The defending national champion Crimson Tide is the number 1 team in the AP preseason top 25, while Clemson, which lost a thrilling championship game to Alabama in January, is second. Number 3, Oklahoma, followed by Florida State and LSU.
All right. How does Rutgers do this year, by the way?
They're number 85.
All right, then. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. A great story about a community coming together in a small Montana town to help a little girl injured while hiking on Saturday at a livestock sale at the Montana Fair. The sheep owned by the Leiser family fetched a remarkable price. The money will go toward medical bills for Camry Leiser, who endured months of intensive surgery after a hiking accident in June. She tumbled about 45 feet and got pinned beneath a boulder. She had to be moved to Salt Lake City and spent nearly 7 weeks in intensive care. The family needed help with medical bills following all those surgeries, so they put a sheep up for auction. The Billings Gazette says the sheep, known as Mr. Ramsbottom, went for more than $14,000. He commanded $105 per pound, when normally the animals auction for about $5 a pound. An estimated 20 people pulled their money together to make it happen for the Leiser family. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. If you're looking to grow or relocate your business, there are 3 numbers you should know. 10, 2000, and 6. 10 stands for Michigan being one of America's top 10 states for business. 2000 is the number of burdensome regulations Michigan has eliminated in the last 5 years. And 6 stands for Michigan's rank for best entrepreneurial climates. All those numbers add up to the one state that has all that and more. Michigan. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. That's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.